the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks. Welcome to Beyond the Pitch on NBC Sports. I am Phil Brown. As always, thanks for taking the time to join me. I am absolutely delighted and honoured to have on the show today Martin Edwards. Martin Edwards, of course, ex-Manchester United owner, chairman. His father owned the football club as well, the way. Long, long history of Manchester United, who's just released a book, Red Glory, which is a chronologue history of Martin at the football club. Incredible stories of some brilliant events that took place at Old Trafford during his tenure. And I highly recommend you go out and get this book. Martin, how you doing?
I'm very good, thank you, Phil.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to America. You've written this book, Red Glory. Tell me a little bit about it, why you decided to do it.
Well, I reached the age of 70 2 years ago, and I got approached by an author who writes books about personalities, and he said, why haven't I written a book? And I said, well, you know, people write books for two reasons, really. They're either for ego and money, and I didn't feel I needed to do it. I didn't need the money, and I hadn't particularly got the ego. But I got to the age of 70, and I thought, well, if I don't do it now, there's some interesting stories there to tell. And if I don't do it now, my memory will go as I get older, and I'll be too old soon to do it. So it was now or never, and it, just his approach seemed the right time. So I decided to do it.
It's wonderful for old United fans like me, whose memory, I started supporting United in the early 80s when I was a young boy growing up in Belfast, and a lot of the events you talk about in the book are things that I remember. It's interesting, you've set the record straight on a number of things that history and mythology has taken over, notably, of course, the Eric Cantona situation, which was quite interesting because Sir Alex, of course, was told that a very different way. I want to take you back to Michael Knighton, and when Michael Knighton tried to buy the football club. That, in hindsight, in history, looks rather bizarre about how it all went down the keepy ups in front of the Stretford End. Is there anything about that process you regret?
Yes. I mean, obviously, nothing ever happened. But, I mean, the reason I was interested in the Michael Knighton bid was because, apart from buying my shares, he was also going to develop the Stretford End. And that was going to cost about $10 million. The club hadn't got $10 million at the time. I certainly hadn't got $10 million. So I just felt that if I turned that down, the supporters wouldn't have been very pleased because it was an opportunity to develop the stand. But, of course, it never happened, the deal, for a number of reasons. But I wasn't particularly happy that day because, although he had an option to buy my shares, he hadn't completed that option. He didn't own the club. And he mentioned it to me the day before that he was intending to go out on the pitch and kick a football. And I said, well, don't do it, Michael, because you don't own the club yet. And I said, I don't think it's an appropriate thing to do anyway. Mm-hmm. But he decided on his own bat to go and do it. And out he went. And I was mortified when he did it.
You talk about selling the club. I think the price was around $20 million at the time. When you look at and you say you didn't have $10 million, the club didn't have $10 million. Is that what prompted you, after the Knighton bid failed, to take the club public?
It was indeed, because, I mean, we still had to develop the Stretford End, and there was only two ways we could do it. It was either a buyer came in who had the money to do it, or we floated the club, and by floating the club, we earned enough money from the float to actually to raise enough money to build the Stretford End. So that is exactly the reason that we did it. That's why we went that route.
In the book, of course, you talk about your relationship with Sir Alex. Obviously, fantastically successful manager. We know what his personality is like and how sometimes individuals with that type of personality, Roy Keane, of course, same personality, can be quite difficult to get along with. And obviously, this story has been done to death about where you're going to sack him in the year of the FA Cup. If the United hadn't have beaten Forest. But beyond yourself, was there doubts about Sir Alex staying on as manager if United had won out of the FA Cup? Maybe Bobby Charlton or other people at the football club, were they of a different opinion, Martin, and saying to you, this guy has to go if he doesn't deliver?
Well, We were under great pressure. A lot of supporters weren't happy.
Yeah.
I mean, Alex had been with us for 4 years by then, and we hadn't won a trophy, and the team was pretty low in the league. That a cup run, obviously a cup run was necessary, but we never discussed Alex's position at a board meeting. I can honestly say that. We knew how hard Alex was working in the club, with the youth, with the other teams. We just bought 5 players that year. We had to give them time to settle in. We were just hopeful that sooner or later things would turn for us. But it didn't come down to that one game. But I've always said, had we gone to the end of that season, and we hadn't picked up, we were still low in the league, we hadn't had a good cup run, and we were struggling, we would have been under even more pressure to make a change. So I'm not sure we could have resisted it much longer.
Sure. Obviously, during that time, Martin, there's a lot of players that almost came to Old Trafford, which obviously for fans, they're very interested to hear. I had a conversation with Mark Bosnich a year or so ago, and he told me, and I don't know if this is correct or not, you can set the record straight, in relation to Alan Shearer. Alan Shearer did not want to come to Manchester United. His agent, Tony Stevens, did not want Alan Shearer to come to Manchester United due to some issues between Alex Ferguson, David Beckham, and his agent. What actually happened with Alan Shearer?
What happened with Alan Shearer is Alan Shearer, Tony Stevens was his agent. I'd actually done a deal with Tony Stevens as far as Alan Shearer's contract was concerned. We'd come to a settlement. Alan Shearer had been to Alex Ferguson's house, spoke to Alex Ferguson, assured Alex Ferguson that he wanted to come. The problem, I think, was with the chairman of Blackburn, Jack Walker, who was not a great fan of Manchester United, a local rivals, both Lancashire clubs. He did not want Alan Shearer to come to Manchester United. Alan Shearer was quite close to Jack Walker. He was almost like a father figure to him. And I don't think Alan wanted to upset Alan by coming to United. And I'm not sure that Jack Walker would have let him come anyway. Whereas he was happy for Alan to go to Newcastle. I don't think that was a threat to him.
What about Gabriel Batistuta, another player that was often linked with Old Trafford, United fans greatly admired? Was he ever a serious target for the club?
Alex Ferguson was keen to sign Batistuta, and we looked at the situation. But just at that time, the wages that Batistuta wanted, and of course we were talking nets, I can't remember the figures now, but they would have jeopardised our wage structure at the club at the time, and therefore we turned it down.
I want to talk to you about the year United sold Ince, Hughes, Kanchelskis, brought through the young players. Did you, in your mind, have any doubts about that season? Was that something that where you said, you spoke about beforehand, we're going to let these key players go, we're going to make room for these kids, we're not going to make any signings that summer? Was there any attempts to make signings that summer that didn't go through, or was that always a strategy to let these kids leave, or to let these senior players leave to bring the kids through?
No, I think they were all individual situations. I think if you take Andre Kanchelskis, he'd had a knee injury, and I think there was some doubts from the manager that it was a genuine injury, and he had an operation, and I think he was upset that he wasn't believed. Mm. I think with the case of Ince, I think there'd been a couple of incidents that season, a couple of matches where Ince hadn't followed out the manager's instructions in a couple of games, and we'd lost the games, and therefore I think Alex blamed Ince for that. And of course he knew that he had Butts and Beckham and Scholes, all midfield players, to come through to replace him. So you know that wasn't a problem. And I think with Mark Hughes was coming towards the end of his contract. He decided that he wanted to leave because I think Andy Cole had just come in. He probably felt that he wasn't going to be first choice anymore, and he was offered a new opportunity with Chelsea. So he decided to take it. So they're all different situations, really. But there's no doubt in Alex allowing those players to go that he knew what he had in reserve as far as the 92 youth team players were concerned. They were all knocking on the door for first team football, and he wouldn't have been able to hold them back much longer.
How would you describe your relationship, Martin, with the United fans throughout your tenure at the club?
Well, my relationship with the fans wasn't necessarily great, but that didn't affect the running of the club. My relationship with the staff and Alex Ferguson was much more important than my relationship with the fans. And I understand my relationship with the fans wasn't, because they always felt that I was prepared. I was, wanted to sell the club. I was never wanted to sell the club. I was approached, and if you, ever you were approached, you have to consider those approaches. None of them came off. We were still eventually we floated the club, and that solved the problem. But I think that didn't make me popular. But at the end of the day, me being popular or not didn't affect the running of the club and the success the club had.
When you look at United today, would United still resemble what they do today if you had remained completely in charge?
That's a difficult, very difficult question to answer. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. All I do know is that from 1980 to 2003, when I stepped down, a lot had changed in football. Yeah. And of course, a lot of it was for the reason that the Premier League got started. Once the Premier League started, then that changed a lot of things. The Premier League was in charge of its own budgets. It could do its own TV deals. It could do its own sponsorship deals. Sky came in and changed things, because Sky put so much money in for the televised football that budgets became greater. You could attract better players and all the rest of it. And of course, merchandising then kicked off because of the worldwide support for English football. And just the whole game changed. Really, when the Premier League started in 1992-93 season.
Yeah, that was really the question. There's an inevitability with the progress of the football club. Obviously, times have changed. Football fans have changed. And you were criticised at times for the progress of United towards that, which probably unfairly so at many times, is that you can't stop how the evolution of the merchandise and the way the club's being run commercially. When you were at Manchester United, Martin, outside of what we know, of course the Sky bid, the Michael Knighton bid, and eventually the club going floating with JP McManus and McMagner taking over the club, was there any other approaches from any oligarchs, any people we never got to hear about?
No, obviously, Robert Maxwell was one. Yep. Who tried to grab a lot of publicity surrounding that. But no, not really, no, I don't think there were.
Last couple of questions, Martin. When you talk about Cantona, of course, Cantona came off because United obviously were trying to get David Hurst. How close were the club to actually signing David Hurst and not Cantona?
Well, we made an offer for David Hurst to Sheffield Wednesday, and that was turned down. So that was the end of that. But the Cantona thing, it wasn't David Hurst or Cantona. We tried to sign David Hurst. Cantona came out of the blue, really, out of a conversation between Bill Fotherby and I. They were interested in Dennis Irwin, and I happened to throw Cantona's name in the ring, and we didn't sell Irwin to them, but they were prepared to sell Cantona to us. So that just came out of the blue, really. It wasn't as though we'd been after Cantona, and it was a choice between David Hurst. David Hurst came up first, and then we didn't get him, and then suddenly Cantona came up out of the blue. So it wasn't a competition between the two.
Greatest ever signing. Who would you say?
Sorry?
Who would you say was your greatest ever signing?
Well, if you're talking about overall, I'd have to say Alec Ferguson. If you're talking about the players in my time, that were signed in my time, I'd say it was very close between Eric Cantona and Peter Schmeichel.
Last question, Martin. Would you say 99, the travel year, or the year United first broke the 26-year heyday to win the league when Sir Matt Busby saw it? What was your greatest moment as United chairman?
I mean, the 26-year wait was absolutely huge. So to win the league when we did in 93 was a fantastic occasion. But when you consider that against the treble, to win all three, the FA Cup, the Premier League and the Champions League all in one season. And later on that year, we also went on to win the World Club Championship as well. So we actually won everything that year. That has to be the crowning glory.
So many to choose from, Martin. Such a glorious history. So many great times at United. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Really looking forward to the book, Red Glory. We'll upload links onto our website where you can be able to buy this book. When's that? Is it released yet, Martin?
It's released in England. I don't know, worldwide. That's obviously up to the publishers, but I know it's here It's certainly released in England.
Okay, we'll take a look at that. We'll upload links for it, folks. Big thank you to Martin Edwards for taking the time to do this. Honored that you took the time, Martin, to speak to me. Thank you so much, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, indeed.
Cheers, Martin. Thanks, man. Bye.